Well, g'day and welcome back. We're on for another episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian livestock industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. Well, today, for the third time, fantastic to have back on the podcast Ryan Turner, who is our Meats and Livestock Director for StoneX based in Kansas City. RT, good to have you on, mate.
Yeah, good to be back. Thanks for having me. I keep getting asked back, so must be doing something okay.
Something's working. I think, mate, for today, much like previously, just keen to get your views and thoughts on where the US is at the minute, how you guys as a business are seeing things. The place we always love to start, and I know you're the same, is weather. How are seasonally things tracking? I know it's winter. We're coming out of that, but how are things tracking at a seasonal level for your major cow-calf regions in the US?
Yeah, well, I think first thing, this is the first one of these we've done face-to-face. So for those of you that are listening in, Ripley's actually sitting here in Kansas City with us today. So welcome to the US, welcome to Kansas City. We're glad to have you.
Mate, thank you. Talking of weather, Kansas City hasn't turned much on this week. It's been pretty ordinary, but it is nice to do it in person. It's a bit of a change.
Yeah, it's awesome. Great to have you here.
Yeah.
So US weather scenario has not changed a lot since probably the last time we talked. So there's been a little bit of improvement in moisture conditions across some of the southern regions. We've had quite a bit of snow and rain in parts of Oklahoma, parts of Texas, on into the southeast. But the some of the major ranching areas, especially to the west, if you go west of kind of here, Kansas City, you get, western Kansas, Colorado, out into the, Dakotas, Montana, out into that area, northwest of here, it's still really dry. Yep. So we've got a still, if you look at the U.S. drought monitor, maps, there's still pretty good swath of the western part of the U.S. that's in a drought. Just last week, the USDA actually updated some of their numbers, and they have 50% of the what they call the U.S. cattle growing regions. 50% are in at least a moderate drought scenario right now, and 16% is in a severe drought scenario. So we've still got issues with the grasslands and rangeland conditions, pasture conditions. And I know we'll get into it a little bit later here, but that's still a driving force behind the herd rebuilding effort or lack thereof.
Interesting. And it's you'd think after such a long time it might have turned around in broader fashion, but clearly it hasn't, and it's a good follow-on is exactly what you mentioned, the rebuild situation. Australians are glued to any kind of announcement suggesting one way or the other. Obviously, the USDA had their annual figures come out, I think it was last month. Give us a rundown on your views of where it's at. Has it changed, like the weather? What's the go?
Yeah, so there's a lot of factors at play. Obviously, the drought is one of those. But as far as the data goes, we have not started to rebuild the herd here in the U.S. I think you could probably say we've stabilized. We're not necessarily losing numbers, and we're not seeing the strong trends downward in cow numbers and inventory numbers. But we've definitely not started to rebuild yet. And I think, you mentioned the Jan 1 annual inventory report from the USDA. I think largely that was very disappointing to a lot of people. I think the industry was in anticipation of at least a 0.5% to 1% increase in overall inventory numbers. And I think we ended up being actually down 1% year over year. So I think the market was largely disappointed by that, because I think most people are hoping that we start to see inventory and numbers start to rebuild. You know, there's a lot of asset classes, a lot of sectors that are looking for that rebuild effort to begin, and it's just not happening.
Mm. And that's, you know, sitting down with you guys this week, sitting with the meat end of the market, clients of yours, clients of the meat end in the physical space, that has been the key theme that I've picked up. You know, it's coming up in every conversation, is that, I suppose, the follow on from the rebuild is the fact that the cattle supply is so tight.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was last week or the week before on the Daily Wire, Ben commented and recognized it was the lowest slaughter weekly rate in 10 years for that week.
Yeah. I mean, we've throttled it all the way back to, you know, just 517,000 head a week, you know, for this time of year. That's, like Ben mentioned, that's historically low. And, you know, a lot of people ask the question, why? And we, you know, we've talked about the weather. The economics are good, right? The cow-calf producer here in the U.S. is making really good money, you know, $500, $600, $700 a head, profitability, depending on kind of where you're at and who you're looking at. But, you know, profitability is really good. But on the flip side of that, it's if you're a cow-calf producer and you've got a calf on the ground, a heifer calf that you could either choose to retain and get a new calf out of, you know, 1 to 2 years down the road, or sell that animal today in some of the highest price feeder cattle markets that we've ever seen in history, it's a tough ask to say, okay, I'm going to hold on to that animal and take that risk out into the future, versus, you know, I can sell that animal today and you know, clip the coupon now. And I think we're seeing there's some hesitancy from the cow-calf producer to go ahead and retain those animals given the high prices that we're seeing today.
So then the thought in my mind is, purely on a price and market environment, what's it going to take from a price level to encourage retention? Like, are we going to have to see a material step back in rates for the producer, a bit like what we've seen and do see from time to time in Australia? Is the market's not sitting right for the producer, they step back and go, right, we'll just hold on to these cattle and sort of ride it. Like, does that need to be seen from a price and market level to encourage some kind of retention?
Yeah, I was jokingly going to say, you know, if the probably the fastest way to get herd rebuild going here in the U.S. is to see a material downturn in feeder cattle market prices.
Yeah.
Like if we take a huge downturn for whatever reason,
yeah,
that's when you would probably see producers be like, okay, well, I'll just hang on to this animal and we'll see what happens a year or two from now. So yeah, I think that's a very, very legit point.
Yeah.
Is that would likely be a catalyst for herd rebuild.
Interesting. And you mentioned feeder prices. Looking at the cattle on feed monthly report, cumulative placements down, Mexico's still a problem. In my mind, that to me says that we're going to, or the broader beef market is going to, in the US, is going to have to see at some point a crunch on grain fed beef production, even though carcass weights are remaining really strong, so actual beef production is solid. If we're getting lower cattle in the feedlot over a longer extended period, surely that's going to have an impact, say, in the second half of the year on grain-fed beef production due to these low placements now. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will some. And to your point, though, you're right. I mean, on cattle on feed numbers continue to, you know, kind of year over year run lower. And, you know, one is just available supply, right? You know, we talked about the inventory report. Calf crop was lower again year over year. You mentioned the Mexico border still being closed to feeder cattle imports. You know, that's a reduction of, I think, you know, we were running 30,000-35,000 head a week. So we continue to see those animals not come in. But beef production has remained relatively stable. I was looking at some statistics there yesterday, and 2020 2005, total beef production in the U.S. Ran at about 26 billion pounds. In 2005, 20 years ago, it was the same 26 billion pounds. And we did that this past year on 4 million less cows.
Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, we say that, well, just because we have less animals, at some point, beef production has to tighten up. I'm not so sure that it has to. I do think that we're pushing the limits on some of these cattle weights and carcass weights. And at some point, you're right? If the cattle herd just continues to decline, yeah, we'll see grain-fed beef production decline as well. But for now, the economic, you know, you want to talk about economic incentive, the economic incentive is there to put more, you know, max out weights. I mean, cost of gains for the, you know, just call it an average cost of gain for a feed yard here in the U.S. are running around $1 a pound, you know, and we traded cattle at 240 in the 240s. So, you know, $2.40 a pound. So you can, then I can do that math.
It's pretty simple at that point, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And on that, obviously, corn's a key input for the feedlot system. How's that looking forwards for, you know, availability of obviously the second key input in their business being corn? Plenty of supply coming again.
Yeah, we had a big crop this last fall. So, you know, Nove of 25, we had a big crop. We'll have plenty of corn around, at least through the summer and late summer this year. You know, unknown what next year's crop will look like. Right now, the outlook is for a few less acres. I think the USDA is currently projecting 3 to 4 million less corn acres this year versus last year. But if we have normal growing conditions, we'll still be able to produce a large crop and have adequate supplies. So right now today, I think, you know, corn prices can remain, you know, relatively stable for the feeding industry. And the risk would be some type of a adverse weather event here in the U.S. this summer, you know, in the Midwest, that would hurt corn production, you know, so, and that's going to be some type of a drought scenario. And I don't know that that's going to happen. If it does, and you know, prices can get higher, but right now the outlook is for pretty stable corn pricing.
Yep. And we're talking obviously on cost of gain at the minute. The other theme which I didn't mention is obviously the profitability or lack thereof for the packers. I know I didn't have this in the list of questions, do you want to explain to us what that's actually looking like at the minute for the U.S. packing sector?
Yeah, so we've been doing presentations over the course of the winter, and you know, the question always gets asked, you know, what's your outlook on you know, packing industry, packing capacity, profitability, et cetera. And you know, right now, it's not, you know, unknown or rocket science. They're losing a lot of money. You know, estimates range from, you know, $150 to $300 a head loss, you know, on every animal that the packer runs through the plant right now. We've seen some right sizing of the industry, if you want to call it that, you know, with Tyson closing their plant in Lexington, Nebraska, and removing a shift down at the plant in the Texas Panhandle. And so, you know, we've seen that happen, and even after that, we continue to see packing margins suffer. And we talk about, you know, it's almost like right now, it sounds odd to say, but beef and cattle are almost two different markets. Mm-hmm. The cattle supply is really tight. And so they're having to scramble and push and try to get animals bought. The beef supply, believe it or not, is actually relatively adequate. I know prices are high, and, you know, we've been able to maintain that high price of beef across, you know, the course of the last, you know, really the last 2 years. But if you look at total net availability of beef, when you factor in the amount of product that we're importing, you know, both from you guys in Australia and from Brazil, net beef availability in the U.S. is actually going to be it was higher in 2025 than it was in 24. And we talked about this on the last podcast. It's going to be the same thing in 26. So in 26, the estimates right now are for total beef availability, net availability, to be higher this year than it was last. And so the available supply is there when you factor in imports. And so that keeps beef prices, while they're high relative to cattle, they haven't gone up as much. And so that keeps packing margins in the red. And I mean, we're going to have, you know, I hate to say this, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I think we're very likely going to see another major packing plant here in the U.S. close here in this calendar year of 2026. Those are not fun events. That's not what anybody wants, but I do think that that's kind of where we're headed here with the industry right now. And the packing industry will right size quicker than the rest of the industry, right? It won't wait on the herd to rebuild, you know, which takes 1, 2, 3 years, maybe. You know, the packing plant can close in a month. And, yeah. You know, so unfortunately, I think that's kind of where we're headed.
Yeah. And I think it all comes down to economics, doesn't it? And if it's not working and decisions have got to be made, well, that's what's got to happen. I think the synergies, it's interesting, are quite similar in Australian lamb at the minute. For example, cost pressures are really high because of the livestock price, because of the lamb and sheep price for that matter. And that's, you know, do you feel the market is factoring in a right sizing, you know, on packing capacity in the US?
I think we're maybe starting to, and some of that's happened just in the last few weeks. You know, we talked about the reduced slaughter rates. That has propped up the price of beef. We've seen a nice sharp rally here in the last 10 to 20 days in the overall box beef cutout values. Last week we did see the cash cattle markets trade lower. That was the first time in 8 weeks that the cash cattle market had traded lower. So, you know, so the last few weeks of reduced slaughter rates, like dramatically reduced slaughter rates, is starting to show up a little bit, but I think they've got to keep that sustained, you know, to keep beef prices going higher and cash cattle prices going lower. It's going to take more than what they've done today. So I would tell you that no, the market probably hasn't fully priced in a right sizing of the industry yet.
Mm-hmm. And on price, something we haven't spoken on, markets from the outside in the US have looked solid for the first 2 months of the year, but underlying that, there's been a lot of volatility. The other thing that seems to pop up is this sensitivity to headline risk, which we spoke about. I think it's probably something Australians and the Australian market doesn't see or notice or understand as much as the market does over here. But do you want to just give us a rundown of even just a couple of the things that have seen markets move at really rapid, volatile levels quite quickly?
Yeah, well, I mean, most recent would be just the developing situation in Iran over the weekend, right? You know, you go home on Friday afternoon and you think one thing, and you know, we had fundamentals, cash market lower, futures markets had started to turn lower. You come in on you know, you wake up on Saturday morning to, you know, headline risk,
right?
Yeah, the world's changed and you were asleep. So and it's not, you know, that's just one example. I mean, we've talked about headline risk now for, well, really, you know, the last year with the current administration and with the way Trump kind of manages things, it's volatile. And, you know, the cattle market and the agricultural commodity markets in general, you know, they aren't immune to that. They don't get left out of that fray. And so headline risk is very real and, you know, it can be a huge disruptor. But one thing I would say is that we have seen these markets be super resilient. And while the headline risk may create a lot of volatility, it seems to be short run. And the volatility spikes, then it kind of goes back to, okay, we're trading fundamentals. And so we've seen these markets, you know, again, while volatility is extreme, they still kind of revert to the fundamentals.
And for the Australian listeners, if they don't follow US feeder and Fed cattle futures markets. The commentary from Ben, Ryan and Adam and the team here in the US, like they can come right off the boil, you know, in the opening minutes of the exchange trading, and then by the end of the day have rallied to pretty much finish where they closed the previous day. Like within intraday moves in the price is really quite substantial.
Yeah, well, like just in the last week, we were just talking about out on the trade desk, right, Rip? We were saying, like, you know, the course of the last 8 days, you know, 8 days ago, we saw the market start to drop. We proceeded to see live cattle futures drop about $15 a hundredweight, which is a material move.
Yeah.
And then over the course of the last 3 days, we've recovered $8 of that.
Yeah.
You know, so over an 8 day period, we've seen a, you know, 15 plus dollar trading range with extreme volatility in between. And that's just in an 8 day window, you know?
Yeah. It's all over the place. Pivoting a bit, but one the Aussies are always interested in because it's such a key market of ours, and the consumption from the US consumer at a macro level is critical to underlying demand for Australian product. How's the US consumer at a macro general level reacting to these relatively sort of counter-seasonal strength in the cutout and obviously beef prices in general? How's it performing?
Yeah, demand's been really good. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I think we talked about it on the podcast last time. We're and continue to consume more product at higher prices. You know, I mean, it's literally the definition of inelastic demand. I mean, we are and have not really seen any. I mean, there's maybe a few indicators here and there that maybe the consumer starting to run into a price point that they're not as aggressive at. But reality is demand's still been really good. And there's, you know, there's a lot of factors at play, right? It's one, beef quality is really good. You know, choice product and prime product now make up the largest percentage of the carcass here. So it's really good, high quality product. The product that you guys are shipping in or that we're bringing in from Australia is a higher quality product now than it was 1, 2, 3 years ago. So there's that quality aspect of it. And then you also have, you know, a changing consumer trend from a diet perspective here in the U.S. I mean, you're familiar with, and I, you know, big story that we kind of flipped the food pyramid here.
Yes.
You know, in the U.S. with the new, yeah, with the new administration. And so you've got, you know, protein sitting right on top now, and you've got the high protein diets. You've got, the impact of GLP-1s on the American diet. So there's just a lot of things at play that are driving people towards, you know, high quality, nutritious beef. And, you know, and that has not, to me, it doesn't look like it's slowed down a lot.
It's, I think we'll all be pretty excited to hear that's the case. 'Cause it's obviously such an important market and the demand, you know, from you guys last year, it was so solid. First opening 2 months of this year on exports, again, very consistent and stable. I think it's also important from our perspective to see that the demand has remained stable. You know, like it's obviously quite high, but we're not seeing major shifts in orders, which is obviously ultimately affecting export shipments. It's just been consistent, 40,000 ton a month. Like it's just nice, consistent, steady demand. And I think for the Australian industry, that provides surety and consistency. And it's obviously great to hear that at the minute, it's generally ticking along the same as, you know, the conversation we had 6 months ago.
Yeah. And I think that right now is where we're at. I do think there's been an increased, you know, from a competition standpoint, there's probably been a little bit of an increase in competition, from the Brazil, product that we're seeing come into the US. They've really ramped up their production. They've ramped up, you know, their feedlot capacity production, just kind of like, you know, like you were talking about the other day with, Australia moving to more of a US style feeding program. You're seeing a lot of that in Brazil. So their quality is getting a little better as well. But you know, I think the demand for, that product out of Australia is going to continue to run at a pretty high level, at least for the next year or two.
And that'll give everyone a bit of confidence. It's pleasing to hear that. I threw it out to our Australian or my Australian client list, and an audience that we work with at StoneX, and a couple came back with questions.
Okay.
And one of them, which I think is a really interesting one, and it's, you know, we're talking about the drivers and the complexity of the rebuild. One came through from Barry in central Queensland, and he said the Trump administration's tax credits and subsidies for producers encouraging or incentivizing a rebuild, what's your views on the likelihood of that actually happening? And secondly, as an attachment to that, if it happens, how much difference is it really going to make?
So that has been floated about. Nothing has been done there. And I put that at a really, really low probability. I do not think that they're going to have some type of ongoing subsidy. What I do think is possible, and what Trump has kind of proven that he likes to do, is something more like a direct payment. Like, okay, we'll just pay you X amount of dollars per head one time to help get you along. I think there's possibilities that we see some of that, but as far as some type of like, you know, government subsidy on livestock, like maybe what we see on some of the other commodities like grains, I do not think that's going to happen.
Yep.
I don't think that's a high probability outcome. And the second part of your question, you know, what size of impact would that potentially have? Minimal, right? Because of all the other market forces at play that we've already talked about.
Yeah. And I think that's,
you know, a direct payment or a subsidy doesn't cure not having grass because it's not raining. Right? I mean, there's all those other things at play that will be way more important than that type of a government subsidy package.
Mm. And if, you know, as you say, markets are continuing to encourage turnoff, well, understandable, you might get that payment and take yourself to the pub, I suppose.
That's right, there you go.
And the second one, good representation from Central Queensland from Barry. Barry asked, as an American beef industry, what are your views on Brazil and the growth and change it's made in its cattle industry, its beef supply chain in the last 5 to 10 years, when you guys are looking at it from an outsider's perspective?
Yeah, we talked about just a little bit there, but to kind of expand, Brazil has now become the largest beef producer in the world, right? They surpassed the U.S. this year, and they'll probably continue to trend on a higher production scale. So I do think that, you know, again, as they continue to expand their corn production. So if you look at Brazil, they're starting to grow a lot more corn. They go right in behind their soybean crops with corn. They can, talking with some of our colleagues in Brazil who we'll see later this week, you know, they can plant 3 corn crops now.
Yes.
And so as they have more corn, they're going to have more feed at relatively cheaper prices to expand or continue to expand their, you know, their commercial cattle feeding segment in Brazil. And so I think, you know, the trend has been for them to increase production because of global demand. It's not just the U.S., you know, it's Asia Pacific. It's, you know, it's everywhere. So I guess I think they'll probably continue to expand their production and be a, you know, a global force in beef production, just like they have grown to be a global force in soybean and corn production and many other commodities.
Mm. Yeah. And I think we used to, well, it's certainly been my view for a while, they were the sleeping giant, but I don't think they're necessarily sleeping anymore. You know, they're just the scale of their operation, or not even their operation, but just at a macro level, it's impressive. And, you know, the point you make about that consistent supply of corn now quite regularly, you know, I think that's really going to put a firecracker under that expansion in the grain fed system, lifts carcass weights, which lifts production, you know, consistency of supply or consistency of end product, you know, all those things I think are contributing to Brazil, you know, which it already is the dominant player in the space. And it's interesting to hear you guys sort of looking at it a little bit similarly.
And, you know, when we did the global market outlook with Kyle, you know, the you and I and Kyle, I mean, it was interesting to hear his outlook on it too, right? I mean, it's pretty similar to what we're talking about here. And he's, you know, he's kind of right there in the middle of it.
Mm. Mate, that's all I had. Was there anything else that we haven't discussed that you think is worth raising?
No, I think we covered it. I mean, you've got a marketplace that has, you know, we're going on a multi-year bull market, and yeah, and those in history a lot of times tend to come to an end when no one expects it. So,
yeah,
you know, for your customers and our customers alike, you know, these are not times to shy away from managing your risk in these markets. When you're at these types of price levels, this is the exact time, you know, that you want to be playing things pretty close and keeping things under control and not swinging for the fences.
I think that's quite poignant and well-timed. Mate, thank you. It's unreal. First one, obviously, to get to do in person, but really appreciate you taking a bit of time. And I know the Aussies back home will appreciate it. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Next time, backing this one up, we've got two more international guests on, Kao Toledo and Victor Noves, who are in our Brazilian meats and livestock team, directors of that division in Brazil. So we're going to get an update from them, hear from them on exactly what we're talking about today from the Brazilian lens. They're obviously one of our major competitors and will continue to be, and I think it'll be really interesting to get their views. That episode will be released on Friday, the 27th of March, so tune into it. But if today's episode's raised any questions from this conversation, feel free to reach out to me. Send me an email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com or record a voice note of yourself, where you're from, and the question, and we'll get to answering it in the next episode. Feel free to share this with a friend or colleague. There was some really valuable insights and information in this today from Ryan, and to obviously understand from someone with skin in the game in the American market, I think is really important. So feel free to pass it on, or conversely, follow it on your listening platform. That's all from me this week. Thanks for tuning in. Take care, and we'll see you next time.